Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have a fantastic operator turned entrepreneur. You know, we're going to be talking about building, scaling, financing, all the good stuff that we like to hear. I mean, on their end, you know, they're doing amazing. They raised over $90 million, 300 employees, but it's been quite the journey. And we're going to be talking about, you know, things like fundraising during challenging markets and basically, you know, why he decided, you know, to start, let's say, a company versus, you know, doing more like the established companies like he was doing before. Again, a lot of stuff that we'll be covering. Brace yourself for a very inspiring episode. And without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Sean Whiteman. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alejandro. Thank you very much for having me.
So originally born in Arizona and your dad was in the Air Force. So you guys moved quite a bit. So how was life growing up for you?
It was great. We settled in Oregon after a couple of years. So I really consider myself an Oregonian to this day, spending from years 2 through 18 in Oregon.
So obviously your dad in the Air Force, you wanted to eventually do something along the same lines, which you eventually did because you went to West Point. And then from there, you know, you went at it. I guess, how do you think your leadership skills shaped up during that phase in your life?
That's a great question. I think many of you said you've had some military guys on the show before. I think they would all probably tell you roughly the same thing, that military experience is so foundational for you as a leader. You learn at such a early age to take on huge responsibilities, be responsible for people, learn how to be a leader and a follower. It's just, you don't get that in any other job. I mean, I think about when I was 25 years old. I was in charge of 900 guys and a $300 million construction operation on an island in the coast of the Pacific. You know, it's like, you just don't get that sort of thing anywhere else. And so it really, really kind of builds those, lets you make a lot of mistakes as a leader, makes you kind of understand how to relate to, you know, people from below, you know, the equivalent of the factory floor, your soldiers all the way up to having to brief generals and understanding how to alter your style and connect with people at all those various levels. Really, you know, for me, it's come full circle. Now I'm kind of running a home services business and my technicians feel a lot more to me like soldiers than they do some of the other things I've done in my life. So it's been a great experience.
At what point did you realize, hey, maybe, you know, I gotta get into business school and get to learn a little bit what is this business world about?
That's a good question. I'll tell you exactly when it was, when the wall fell, when the Berlin Wall, you know, my war that we had prepped for, you know, we didn't know kind of what the post 9/11 war world would look like, but my war was the Cold War. And when the wall fell, life changed for the military and it suddenly became I'd learned a lot and I actually really loved it, thought I was going to make it a career. And suddenly it just become a lot less enjoyable of a place. And, you know, decided to get out and try the civilian world, you know, thinking we would have a, you know, nice, stable life. And, you know, me and my wife, I think, have moved 16 times since we got out of the military. So it's been kind of a wild ride.
That's amazing. Now, in your guys' case, I mean, you went to Stanford. And Stanford is the land of innovation, you know, entrepreneurship. You know, some of the best entrepreneurs have come out of that program. So you took a little bit longer to get going as an entrepreneur. You know, I'm sure you had a lot of classmates, you know, a lot of people that you met that went on and did their own thing. So what do you think, you know, why it took you so long?
Yeah, because I never really considered myself an entrepreneur. I was, you know, coming out of Stanford, having spent most of my career in the military, I thought I had to figure out what this business world's about. I, like, you know, one of my classmates was Jeff Skoll, who was employee number one at eBay, you know, and helped build that. You got Steve Jurvetson, Jurvetson Draper Fisher. I like some really great entrepreneurs in my class. I wasn't that guy. I needed to figure I remember going to a recruiting event when they were talking about investment bankers. I didn't even know what an investment banker was. So it's like, I went consulting, the consulting world, partially because there was a lot of West Pointers at McKinsey that recruited me there, made me feel like I could learn, fit in and learn things there. So it took, you know, I'm a slow learner, I guess, Alejandro. I needed to kind of understand the business world, understand how businesses tick, what makes them work. And then, you know, I found myself through my consulting days, always really enjoying the working with the operators more, the business leaders more than coming up with the grand strategy and everything. I like working with them and making things happen. So I remember one day, one of my clients goes, "So when are you going to get a real job?" And I kind of laughed, said, "No, I got a real job. You know, we do good things and make good money." And he's like, "Yeah, but come on, that's not a real job." And that's when I decided it was time to go be more of an entrepreneur. Went to work for one of the greatest entrepreneurs in history, a guy named Stuart Resnick in Los Angeles, and really learned how to run and build businesses from him.
Before talking about that, I want to talk about one thing specifically, you know, just to double click on the consulting years at McKinsey. In McKinsey, I find that it gives you an amazing training. And basically on being able to grab one big problem and breaking it down into little problems that you get to tackle to make it a little bit easier to go about problem solving. What kind of training or experience do you think that those years at McKinsey gave you to be an effective operator?
Yeah, McKinsey was, I don't want to, you know, downplay that. McKinsey taught me so much. You're right. The problem solving, the breaking down a problem, the and then also communicating the solution and getting people on board and how you communicate. That becomes, you know, I feel like every time I'm doing a board deck now or something like that, I fall back to those McKinsey days and just how you communicate with multiple levels through data, through visuals, through words. Communicating how you're going to solve that problem is a big part of, I think, what you learn at McKinsey. Besides making the great network and look at, you know, getting to watch and work with a bunch of amazing leaders, but you're right, that problem solving, that analytical approach, how you use data to communicate the solution, it is all really foundational. And something, frankly, it's interesting. I find myself with, even in this world, that's one of the few things that I end up doing as a CEO is helping my team do that sort of stuff. We just had a great board meeting and, you know, all that kind of foundational stuff just helps me put that stuff together.
So let's talk about, like they ask you, getting a real job or a real role. So obviously you have the opportunity here to work with an amazing, you know, leader. I guess, how was that for you and obviously getting your feet wet now as an operator too?
Yeah, he was a great guy. This guy who's, he was renamed now, it's now called The Wonderful Company, but the guy is, you know, he's got DG Water, Teleflora, bunch of agricultural businesses and, you know, self-made multi-billionaire. And he just really taught me, you know, just the basics of how you build a business, how you create value. The guy had, how you create value efficiently, how you manage the business on a day-to-day basis, what things you ought to be looking for. I still find myself to this day, and that was almost 20 years ago I started working for him. I still spout off his business one-liners almost on a daily basis because they were such pearls of wisdom. But it was a tough, but I tell you, it is a tough, I think everybody probably feels that transition, maybe tougher for me than others, but you know, that first P&L you're responsible for, and you go from like just advising and thinking about it to, you know, having to put things in place and then owning the result, like truly owning the results. That first year was some interesting times. That's always a, especially with somebody so successful as him, he know who had owned that business for 20 years. He really taught me a lot.
So in your case, you know, after that, I mean, you went to Teleflora, you did stuff, you know, there with him. Then you went to Public Storage. But one thing that I want to ask you about is you were recruited eventually for Stratford School, and that ended up becoming Spring Education Group. And there you guys did a ton of acquisitions. I mean, a ton. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about literally deploying $1 billion to really acquire these companies. I'm sure that that also gave you a tremendous amount of perspective to see, you know, on pattern recognition on companies that work, companies that don't work, also integration teams. What were some of the biggest takeaways that you took from like that crazy, you know, spree of acquisitions?
Good question. One of the things I'd say is businesses are more alike than different. I think everybody likes to talk about how unique their company is or their industry or their, that really when you come down, you know, I go back to some of my, you know, the one-liners that Stuart taught me, but you know, at the end of the day, you know, like when we were buying all the schools basically operate the same. They have the same metrics. They have the same things that make them successful. And they're very similar to public storage. When I really wanted to annoy the educators at Spring, I would say, hey, all we're really doing is multi-unit retail. And they would, of course, we had a much more important mission maybe than self-storage. But at the end of the day, recruiting processes are the same, the basics of how you market, the importance of local leadership, the importance of local marketing combined with digital marketing. It's like there's all these things are very, very similar. When you start deploying that capital and looking at businesses, like understanding how successful that business is and what you can underwrite, it's, you know, there's a whole lot more that is the same than different. And schools are very similar to HVAC businesses, you know, and home services business. When you look at the kind of the basics of how the quality of that local leader, how they've run their business, even if they haven't run it very sophisticated, you can tell if they're running a good business or not. And, you know, a whole lot easier to make a good business great than a lousy business good.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
That's amazing. Now, in your case, you know, this was the most immediate step, you know, after Spring Education to really get going with becoming finally an entrepreneur. So what needed to happen for you to be like, okay, let's go?
A big part of that was I teamed up with a great venture firm. Juxtapose was my initial funding. And they are, and I think you've done some, and you may have done some interviews with some of their other CEOs, but they are an amazing firm. And I was really drawn to them. They are not your traditional venture firm. They do company creation. So they had done a lot of the kind of the base work in terms of understanding the industry, doing a lot of the commercial due diligence on the industry and deciding they wanted to form a company around it. So they decide to form a company and then they go out and get a CEO to help build out that platform. So for me, that helped de-risk. And when I say de-risk, not just a financial risk, but more of an emotional risk. And, you know, because they put a lot of support around me to make it happen. And besides just the capital that they contributed. So that really helped me make that launch into entrepreneurialism and feel good about it. It just feels like, you know, when you think about what a great kind of senior thesis for me as I get to this stage in my career to start up a company that's going to be a great, you know, pull on all that great operating experience I have and be able to, you know, build it around the things I've learned and create something that's going to, you know, I think last for a long time.
So then what are you guys up to here? What are you guys ultimately, what's the business model? How are you guys making money?
Yeah, so we are, you'd recognize this as a roll up. I think we're very different. We can talk about some of that, but, you know, we are buying up and partnering with local brands, great local brands, and helping them building around those local brands. We've done, well, I think when we first started this, we said we had done 12 acquisitions. So we have done 15 to date because we closed another few in the last few weeks. So we're buying and building these local businesses, and that's most of what the capital is being used towards. But what we're really trying to do is we talk about we're perfecting the home service experience from the inside out. And there's a couple elements to that, and I'll take it in reverse order of perfected from the inside out. What we really wanted to build the company around was we wanted to make it very tech-focused. And I mean that in two ways. Technology, like you might think, and we're putting lots of interesting technologies into play, and we're very tech-forward in that way. But we're also technician-focused. You know, in my Army days, we used to say there's infantry and infantry support. And the company, now we talk about there's only two jobs. There's technicians and technician support. And technicians are the only ones that make us money. And so we're actually building it with the everything with the technician in mind, making their job better, making their job easier, making it so they're more effective. Not just to be good guys. I mean, we think we are good guys, but there's not enough technicians out there. We're not producing enough of them. So making them ever more efficient is very important. But also from the inside out, there's two people in the inside of the home that you need to really optimize around: the technician who's doing the selling and the customer. And this is an industry where the customer has not always been placed first. There's a lot of horrible stories out there around, you know, grandmas being sold, you know, things they don't need. We don't want that. We want to really perfect that interface with the technician and their systems that we're putting into place and really having that trusted consumer experience. And then around that, we're just trying to build a really great operating company. We're not just trying to slap together a bunch of assets as fast as possible. We're trying to build this. My team is a team of operators, and we're building a great operating company. We have everything is built, you know, we're on one technology stack. We have one sales process. We have one recruiting process. Everybody's on the same benefits plan. Things like that that allow you to maybe go a little slow in the beginning, but allow us to scale really fast and really profitably.
And just out of curiosity, how did you guys come up with the name of the company?
Great question, actually. And it's a funny story because Juxtapose always, when they do come up with a concept, they always have a project name. And this one was called Zephyr. So then which means a warm west wind in Greek. And then we went through all the, you know, spent money on getting a brand firm to do a bunch of research for us and consumer focus. And then we came down to Zephyr was the best name.
It was amazing.
It was kind of funny, but yeah, it's a great name.
So in your guys' case, you've raised now about $90 million for Zephyr. And I want to ask you, how was the journey of going through those different financing rounds?
Yeah, that was, so it's really only been, let's call it two rounds, because there was an initial with Juxtapose. And then, we started raising money last fall, which was just can't always control your circumstances, but that was a horrible time, as I'm sure many, you know, everybody tells you, to raise money. So it was kind of a challenge. We were kind of that stage where going out to growth equity firms was kind of the right play. And, you know, it was just a tough environment. You know, eventually came up with two great partners, TPO and Elder River. It's like doing a house renovation. It always takes twice as long and cost you twice as much as you think it's gonna, but it was a challenge.
So then in that case too, I mean, obviously when you got these investors investing, they're investing too in a vision, right? And and not only that, you know, also the customers, the, you know, 300 employees that you guys have. So if you were to go to sleep tonight, Sean, and you wake up in a world where the vision of Sapphire is fully realized, what does that world look like?
Yeah, I don't even I tend not to tether that to a size, to you know, like I was talking about, we want to create a great operating company, not a great transaction. We think we'll create a great transaction for current set of investors and follow-on investors by being a great operating company. So that's what I would say, is that we would be a great operating company that's, let's call it, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood. We're in five regions right now. We've got seven brands. I'd say we're in 10 regions of the country. We're, you know, several hundred million in sales, but more importantly, we're a great operating company that technicians want to be part of, and we are generating nice unit level margins and creating great careers for all of our employees.
That's beautiful. And how have you guys gone about culture too? You know, with 300 employees, you know, how have you guys gone about building the fundamental pillars of culture for the business? And then how do you go about embracing them?
Yeah, that is, and because, you know, my whole corporate team is a virtual team. I mean, everybody, we don't get to sit around looking at each other and talking other than through this sort of medium every day. So we really try. I just got back from, and if you hear a little scratch in my throat, I just got back from last week. We had a year-end gathering of all of our local GMs. And that's really the core of how we try to create that culture, is this partnership with local business leaders, half of whom are former owners that we've acquired, and they bought into the vision and they wanted to stay on and operate. And so we really try to enforce it through them in really creating a system of both collaboration, but shared accountability to each other for kind of the cultural and financial outcomes that we've all committed to for ourselves and our investors.
That's amazing. So I want to ask you something. We're talking about the future before. I want to talk about the past, but doing so with a lens of reflection. If you were able to go back in time, and let's say you're coming out of Stanford, and you, let's say you were to follow, you know, the path of other, you know, classmates and start a company right away, given all your years of having been, let's say, a consultant, an operator, now an entrepreneur, successful entrepreneur, if you were to be there in front of that younger Sean, and be able to give that younger Sean one piece of advice before launching a business, what would that be and why, given what you know now?
One piece of advice. Actually, this is appropriate since I have a daughter who's in business and a son who's at Stanford now. I always tell them, take more chances. You know, significantly raise your risk profile, because you got such a great background. It'll be great. Like, take those risks. I think that's the thing when I look back on it, I go, I've had so much fun doing this, doing some of the other, like, people thought I was crazy when I went from being the COO of Public Storage, a $50 billion company, to go run we were $90 million in revenue at Stratford School. And I did. Had so much fun doing that, building that to taking it from 90 million to, you know, almost $1 billion in, or $750 million in revenue. And that was fun, but that was a big risk. And there's other things we don't need to talk about, but, you know, where I chose not to because I wanted to avoid risk, that turned into these wildly successful things. So I always encourage everybody to take more risks than you're comfortable with.
That's amazing. Because at the end, you know, too, where there's risk, there's growth. Eh? Like when you get like stuck, you know, in those corporate jobs and you get intellectually stuck too. There's like no growth. You become too comfortable. So I love that approach, Sean. So for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
either on, you know, you can find me on LinkedIn or drop me a note at sean@zephyrhome.com.
Amazing. Well, easy enough. Well, Sean, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us.
Thank you, Alejandro. It's really, really been a pleasure.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.